I'm not sure about you, but on my feed on Instagram and Facebook, everyone's in Europe. Everyone is traveling, and I now know the reason why. It's because younger people in Australia are now prioritizing international travel rather than going for the traditional sort of stuff like buying a house. In this video, I want to share with you some of the latest data when it comes to property consumer sentiment. So really focusing on what people are doing when it comes to property, are they renting, and what are they thinking about doing over the next 6 to 12 months. If you're interested, then definitely keep watching. Hey guys, my name's Ravi and welcome back to Personal Finance with Ravi Sharma. If you're new here, smash that subscribe button because I talk about real estate, cryptocurrency, and financial freedom. Now, I saw an interesting article pop up and it caught my attention and then got me to dig deeper to understand what are people actually thinking. Now, fortunately, I've got you guys here to tell me everything you feel, whether it's property related or related to my t-shirt, in the comments down below. So I get a fairly good indication of if you're positive or negative. The comments are very different from what I got in 2021 versus what I'm getting today. Now, this graph here is personal plans Aussies are willing to sacrifice to afford international travel. Owning a car, 25% voted owning a car. So 25% of people are saying, you know what, I don't really need a car. 25% people think that it's better to go on a holiday than own a car. And we get to 12% with owning a home. So 12% of people have decided, you know what, this isn't the year I'm gonna own my home and I'm gonna go and travel internationally. Then we've got a large number of 28% at getting a pet. We've got 10% starting a family, so foregoing having children at the moment. And then you've got 14% getting married. What's really interesting is that if you see any online guru talking about finance, they usually will tell you, don't travel, don't go and do all these things, eat instant noodles, go and save every single dollar you have, don't go and have coffee, like literally live like a peasant, and that's what you should do. Now, I'm not saying that because on this channel, I advocate for a balance. I say that if you need to travel and that's good for your mental health, you should probably travel. Now, could you choose to go to a country where the exchange rate is probably more favorable? Yes, that's how I would approach it. I would stay logical about how I actually travel rather than just saying I can't travel and that's it. Because generally what you'll find is that if you're happy as a person, you'll find a direct correlation between happiness and how much you're able to do when it comes to fulfilling work. And fulfilling work sometimes means more pay as well. And so if you're making more, that means you enter the cycle that next year you could go on a better holiday anyway. The other thing to consider is that obviously for a couple of years, most people couldn't travel. So I can totally understand why people are saying, you know what, I'm done with everything in life. I just want to travel. But that's not the main point of this video. I mean, apart from stating the obvious that yes, it hurts every time everyone's in Europe, I was there last year and now I can really feel what you guys felt when I was like, hey,
yeah, I'm enjoying the beaches in Greece and it's fantastic.
Now, although we can go and dream about all that, what I want to cover off is what the Q2 2023 property sentiment report was. And the reason why this matters is because depending on who the 5 closest people are to you, you think like the 5 people, which means you could almost be in your own little bubble and think that everyone else must think the same way. For example, the closest 5 people to me all run their own businesses. So for me, my closest people are all doing their own thing, which means the challenges we face are very different to what's actually being felt out there. For example, we would sit there and go, oh, look, you know, Facebook has changed the way they're running ads. So we need to learn and adapt. And that's probably going to take up more of our conversation versus how much petrol prices have increased. And I'm not saying one is worse than the other, but what I'm saying is you might be in a situation where your collective group of people are thinking about things differently. Maybe everyone in your actual group is thinking about where they want to travel. So then all of your conversations are around that. And so when you think about that, you're like, well, is everyone else thinking about traveling? Or when you're all thinking about buying a car or going to a certain movie, you're like, everyone else must be thinking that. So these reports keep me quite grounded, but I think it's very worthwhile sharing because there's about 735 people who responded to this. And I think it's very interesting to see how people are thinking. So here are the key findings. We're going to go very high level, but size matters once again. Property buyers have decided that once again, size matters. The relative success in terms of houses delivering more capital growth than units have seen them emerge strongly in the past quarter as a favored property acquisition target of our respondents. Houses are now the preferred intended purchase over the next 12 months among 37% of respondents, a seismic shift from the mere 21% with the intention just 3 months ago. That is a massive change, and I wonder why. While units have shown recent signs of capital growth, the rate of loss-making sales over the past 3 months was the most concerning in the unit market and is likely weighing on the minds of property buyers. So naturally, when you see people go and buy an apartment, especially if it's off the plan, 2 years or 3 years later, they're like,
this was a dud investment. I'm gonna sell, I've lost money on it.
And that is the figure that's been really starting to come out where people thought, okay, 2020, everyone's making money. Let's just throw anything we can. And generally what we've seen, prices have retraced since then, especially for units. When you look at houses, they're still significantly higher than where they were in 2020. So I'm reading this for the first time, so you're getting my live reaction. But what I think is also a big key is within houses, looking at established homes and new house and land packages. What you'll find is that new house and land packages portion is severely underperforming versus the established property. And main reason, developer profits. If someone is going and selling you, whether it's your accountant, broker, or a property advisor, very different to a buyer's agent, if they're going and saying,
you should buy this, it's a brand new house and land package.
Believe me, they're getting at least $20,000 to $30,000 from the developer just to on-sell that to you. They'll sell it to you saying,
well, yeah, it's gonna cost you nothing.
But in fact, it actually does. And you realize this 3 to 5 years later when you've got a dud investment that you overpaid for. Number two is onlookers are keeping their ammunition dry. In asking survey respondents about what property transactions they had made in the last year, activity in the residential market was largely unchanged from the previous quarter. While commercial sellers, about 5%, were sitting in the sidelines compared to last quarter when 10% had sold a property. Our respondents of Q2 2023 have been the most inactive since our surveys began, in a clear sign that economic turbulence and market uncertainty has kept so many on the sidelines. That is huge. That's probably the key takeaway without knowing what else is on here. But to know that this is the most inactive people have been just gives me more confidence that what I'm thinking is going to play out in terms of my hypothesis for future growth this year and next year is coming to fruition. While many are not able to afford to purchase a property, there are many that actually can. And what they're doing is they're just waiting. They're waiting for some certainty around the inflation problem, around the economic problems, and the potential of a recession. But once those things clear up, a lot of those people will flow in irrespective of those interest rates increasing or not. I know for a fact that I've spoken to two people only this morning that have been sitting on the sidelines for the past 3 months, despite interest rates going up and sort of stabilizing, they've always been able to purchase. They just want to wait until now. So although on the surface for the last 2 months, if interest rates haven't changed, you should technically not have new buyers. You've actually got a lot of people sitting there that are cashed up, can borrow, but just have chosen not to. I'm not one of these guys because as soon as I can borrow, I go and buy something. But there are others that have a lower risk tolerance plus different circumstances in their life. Number three is interest rate worries not abating. By the midway mark of 2023, borrowers' heads were collectively bowed, weighed down by the burden of 12 rate rises in almost as many months. By that stage, $15,168 had been added to the average Aussie mortgage since rates were at last 0.1% in April 2022. So it's with little surprise interest rates remain, together with the associated difficulties caused by a lack of finance availability, the biggest concerns confronting survey respondents. The two factors combined were equally prominent as the driving influences behind almost a quarter of the respondents' property decision making for the coming 12 months. And we can see that here, interest rate concern, it's been about the same for about 12 months. And you can see decision to buy affected, yes, 46% have said it's affected them, but also decision to sell has been affected by 44%. And this is exactly what I'm saying, is as interest rates start dropping, and they will in 2024, irrespective of what you and I believe, that's what the market is suggesting, that we will see a large increase in activity. So we could have one of the biggest years when it comes to property transactions next year, coming off such high interest rates. People have been forced to just stay in their same position. They may have wanted to sell, but they can't sell. They may have wanted to move, but they can't move. So it's pretty much gone band-aid approach. We're gonna wait and kick the can down the road for the next 12 months, and then we decide to transact in property and do what we need. Number four is the RBA is falling out of favor fast. Okay. No surprises there. Ending months of speculation, the federal government recently confirmed Dr. Philip Lowe's reign in the RBA's top job would end in September. For many of our respondents, it's not a moment too soon. I get it. People don't like Philip Lowe because he's increased free interest rates so high. But think about this. Wouldn't it have been worse if he didn't increase them as high and then inflation continues higher for much longer and then we have a significant problem? I think he has had to do what he's had to do. They've made him the fall guy. And yes, it wasn't wise to come out and suggest,
hey, interest rates won't increase till 2024, which is what he promised.
But who's actually giving him this sort of advice? And is he reviewing it? Not sure, but let's continue. Number five is signs of hope for hard hit renters and borrowers. In a self-perpetuating and rather messy cycle, climbing rents are contributing to high inflation, leading to interest rates heading north, which in turn is driving investors out of the market, which is leading to lower vacancy rates and ever higher record rents, which feeds into the Australian Bureau of Statistics for inflation data, again contributing to the interest rates going up on almost a monthly basis.
Holy shit.
That's pretty much the perfect cycle, which we've discussed on this channel before as well. To summarize what I just said was, as interest rates go up, people are forced to sell. And generally it's the investors because they're holding maybe two or three properties. So they go, I'll just offload one. I'm going to keep my house. They offload one. That one gets picked up by an owner occupier who said prices have come down a little bit. Let me go buy. That takes one property off the rental market, which means vacancy rates drop. Now, although that one person that bought that property may have been renting and now converted into an owner occupier, we have seen a lot of net migration out from those unaffordable suburbs into affordable suburbs. So what we've generally seen is that although this property is getting picked up by an owner-occupier, it could mean that they're coming from outside that suburb. So now there's increased pressure because you've now taken one rental property out of the market, but not necessarily one renter. You took one renter from a different market altogether. And so they've now purchased a property, there's less on the market, that increases rents. And as increased rents, you've got increase of inflation. And if inflation goes up, interest rates must stay higher for longer. Thank you for coming to my TED Talk. And just here, landlords willing to lose a good tenant to pursue the highest rent possible. 68% people said no, and 32% said yes. And households under mortgage or rental stress, 56% said no, 8% unsure, and 36% said yes. Context would be very important here, and I'd suspect that these numbers have been increasing. You know, even with landlords, if they didn't want to increase rents, they're probably forced to now increase rents, and the tenants are willing to take it on, purely because if the landlord can't pass on those costs to the tenant, they may be forced to sell, which means the tenant has to find a new place anyway. And when it comes to mortgage and rental stress, I think this number is increasing, but again, nowhere at the levels that people claim that, oh my God, the world's gonna collapse. For me, I would get really concerned when that yes number goes past 50%, then it would be a cause for concern. And the last key takeaway is incentivizing build to rent. Build to rent is still in its relative infancy in Australia, but is growing in stature. It's a housing model in which only 20 of our respondents, so 1.7%, say they will live in during the next 12 months. Yet BTR has taken on significant status as a key weapon in the fight against diminishing housing supply and rental crisis. Build to rent is effectively a concept where it's being built for the specific purpose to go to renters, and that would increase the rental supply in those areas. Who's going to own these properties? Not sure. Is it the developer that takes it on? Is it the government that subsidizes it, or people investing? If you're someone that's investing in a property like that, generally you may not see as high levels of growth compared to an area that has owner occupiers. Owner occupiers are generally more emotional when they go and purchase a place, so they would then drive the prices higher. In this case, if you've got now a whole block of units and potentially other blocks of units, if there's no demand for that supply, then rents continue to stagnate, and then you're not actually seeing the increase, because from an investor's point of view, if you're buying this purely just for cash flow, I can understand, but the rents will not be near as high to give you that positive cash flow. And then for an investor, you're looking at capital growth, which again is going to severely underperform in something like this, similar to like service apartments. I'm not sure how it would work here in Australia, but they could introduce it at a very small level and small scale to actually see if it works. What are your thoughts around the findings from this survey? Some were quite obvious, but some could be surprising. So comment down below what your thoughts are around the findings, or if you had something to add as well. It's very insightful for me as well, because then I know what content you guys actually want as well. If you guys have enjoyed this video, smash that like button, subscribe if you haven't already, and I'll catch you guys in the next one. Thanks, guys.